place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to the Celebrity Perspective, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight we're talking to someone that I find extremely interesting. I find extremely interesting because Carrie Zane is an Emmy Award-winning television executive producer. She's been internationally recognized single mom lifestyle expert, a co-parent authority. She's a speaker, she's a spokesperson, and she's on the Amazon best-selling author of her latest book, A Single Mom's Guide to Finding the Real One. But even more so, the coolest thing is that it doesn't stop there. She is prolific. Her newest novel is coming out in just a few days. And the title of that is My Lover's Keeper. And I'm so interested to finding out more about the latest novel, more about Carrie's amazing things that she's been doing, but also to understand how she's truly living her true life and being authentic in every step of the way. Carrie, thank you so much for joining the Celebrity Perspective. I'm so glad to have you on tonight.
I am so happy to be here.
Awesome. So tell me, okay, you got a lot on your plate. I mean, being an Emmy Award-winning television exec, being a writer, you know, being an expert on lifestyle and co-parenting. Tell me how you got started in all this.
Well, TV I've been in for 25 years, so that's kind of the core of who I am, and I love it. It's like, I tell people it's like my heroine. I can't stop myself, so I keep producing television. But about 13 years ago, I went through a divorce and was in a space where I felt very alone and afraid and didn't know who to turn to, and there weren't a lot of resources out there. And so I decided at one point to put my TV career on hold, and I wrote my first book, which is It Takes All Five. And it was, you know, it's a self-helper for single moms, and I'm really proud of it. I got a degree in spiritual psychology concurrent with the book, so it's got a lot of good meat to it. And then, you know, and then I kind of went back to my world of telling stories and started producing TV again a couple of years ago and wrote my second novel, which I am so, it's like giving birth to a baby, except, you know, I have two daughters. That took 9 months. Book took 5 years. But
that's cool.
Like, super excited for it to really, right. I know. It's like, wow. But yes, next Tuesday, May 3rd, it releases and goes out to the world.
So that's amazing. You know, I think it's interesting that you do have an MA in spiritual psychology. That is very neat. I don't know many people that have that. Tell me more about what got your interest into spiritual psychology.
You know, I was looking for something to really amp up what I was going to create for single mothers. And there's a program out here in California given by the University of Santa Monica. And so I explored it, and it made a lot of sense to me. It was a wonderful 2-year program, super, super intense. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about people and how to deal with people and how to speak with people and how to be in relationships. And I have to say that program, that was great for my self-help book, and all the people who get to read it benefit from my 2 years of study. You know, it's like it's condensed down and easy to digest. But that program also helped me understand character and story so much better. And I think it makes what I produce and what I write so much more powerful, and characters have a lot more depth. So, you know, it was cool all the way around.
So before we get into your latest book, tell me about the best-selling book that It Takes All Five, A Single Mom's Guide to Finding the Real One.
Yes, that book is written for single mothers. It's broken down into 3 parts. So it's about healing the inside, healing the outside, and then moving on in your life and how you want to create your relationships, whether that is in, you know, a relationship with a new lover or if it's, you know, a better relationship with yourself. So it's a great guide, you know. And I have a website, a companion website, and online courses. So if there are any single moms out there who are kind of struggling and going through some stuff, you know, you might want to check it out.
That's a great resource, because I know that there's a lot of folks, you know, a lot of women out there that have gone through divorce and have gone through the change and raising their children. Some have not ever been married and dealing with, you know, being a single mom. And it's always nice to know that you're not alone. And it's always nice to know that somebody's been through it and somebody's got a few answers, you know, and that is always a positive take on that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting because I think when we're, well, for me, because I know there are a lot of single parents who decided to be single parents on their own, or, you know, sometimes you lose a loved one, unfortunately, and you become a single parent by default. But, you know, when you're in a marriage and your partner isn't present, you think, I can do this myself. But when you actually get out and do it yourself, it's so much harder than you ever imagined. And I think married moms, also nobody understands that single mom process in life until you're actually living it, and it is far more difficult than anyone ever imagined. So it is nice to, you know, like, create a community and know we're not alone, and how are we balancing, and how are we handling our finances, and where are we fitting in a love life when we have little kids who are now judging the, you know, whichever man comes to the door, which is interesting. You know, at one point it's like your parents, but, you know, I had like an 8 and a 12-year-old daughter who were like, every time a guy came through, they're like, no, mom. Mm-mm. You know, and they're kind of still like that. They're 21 and 25 and they're like, not good enough. I'm like, all right. Okay.
You're like, is anyone ever going to be good enough?
Exactly. And the answer is no. So, you know, so there's a whole method to, like, dealing with your kids, you know, adult, whether they're, you know, 8 or, you know, 40, they always have opinions. So.
That's so true. That's so true. So tell me, okay, so I'm really interested in your latest novel, and I know that hits bookstores around the country on May 3rd, and the title of that book is My Lover's Keeper. Tell me more about this. This is very intriguing.
Yeah, I love this book so much, and it is based on real events. And they're real events that happened in my life, you know, because everybody says, write what you know. So this was definitely a story that was very near and dear to me. It has a lot of themes that I think are really relatable to a lot of people, but it's basically a love triangle gone totally wrong. And you know, I invite people to read it because I'm one of the characters and I want people to figure out which character I am in the story.
Oh, very cool. Oh, there's a twist. There's a twist here. I like that.
Oh, yeah. There's a twist.
You know, I'm a therapist, so I often find, you know, occasionally you get a love triangle, you get some folks in that there's stuff going on like that, and it can be interesting because you're not dealing with just your emotions, you're dealing with three people's emotions.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think, well, I don't know if there is ever a love triangle that goes totally right, but, you know, this one has some interesting twists and turns without giving away too much of the plot, but... There's a story with the main character and how she handles the relationships with her lover and this other woman that were befuddling. Word I love. And that's where, you know, the spiritual psychology that we talked about came into play, because I couldn't ask her why she did what she did, but it was like, wow, why did you do that? Like, I don't get it. It's counterintuitive to anything I've ever heard or experienced in my life.
Yeah.
Rich, great for stories, you know?
I love that. I mean, I often hear that a lot of times in the office where you're talking to clients and some of the stuff that they do, you have to sit there and kind of step back and go, huh. You know, where were they mentally or emotionally at the time that they made that decision? You know, I mean, because I've made some bonehead decisions in my time. Okay, I have, but I don't consider it. I would not have wanted to sign any sort of contract or any sort of binding contract when I was making those types of decisions. You know, but it's amazing how sometimes in the thick of things and when you're so close to that emotional type, I don't know, that triangle or that issue, it's hard to see the forest through the trees.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Exactly. So that's pretty interesting. So this has been a labor of love for a few years then.
Yeah. You know, for me, the writing process is interesting because I am very prolific and I do work a lot. And I think it's so easy to get the story out on the page But then comes the editing. and that's what really takes so long. You know, it went through, the book went through like 3 or 4 editors, you know, 3 or 4 edits before it actually became something that is readable to an audience. So it was interesting. I actually think it's easier to edit television shows than it is to edit a book.
I think that's true. I think it's a lot easier sometimes when you're showing, you know, you have the dialogue and then you're showing the characters, and it's a little different when you know that the readers are basically filling in the blank in their own imagination, and the words and the way that they're said are so important to basically create that imagery, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I find that to be interesting. So let me ask you, I want to talk later on before the end of the hour, I want to explain and tell people where they can find the book and all that stuff, where the listeners can find your book. In the meantime, I have an interesting question for you, because you're in the TV world and you're in Los Angeles, and this is there's a lot going on for you. Let me ask you, how do you juggle your career and still at the same time stay quite grounded?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think because I was and am still a single mother, one of the first things you learn is how to balance. And my, honestly, you got to have help. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do it all yourself. So, you know, like, it's about creating a community of people that can help you. When my kids were little, I had a great housekeeper, babysitter who really stepped in and was she was like my wife. You know,
that's cool.
And I had good people around me at work who supported me as well. But I think in terms of staying grounded, especially in a TV career, which can be all consuming, and I was one of the few completely female run production companies. I had my own company for 20 years. Is knowing that you have that family. You know, like, and so it's something that you have to come back to. You can't work 24/7. You have to take a break and you have to be really present to your children. It was a real conscious effort for me to be very, when I was at home, to be mom. And when I was at work, to be businesswoman, and not to try and cross over both, because as women, we, you know, we deal with a lot of guilt. And so you have to like kind of put that away. So that's my keys.
I agree with the concept of guilt, and I understand that comes second nature for a lot of us women. And I do find it interesting. Guilt is always an interesting thing. I find it very interesting, especially you see it in women, you see it in children. I mean, I was raised with it. I was raised in a Catholic family, and I'm nothing against it one way or another, Carrie, but I think that guilt was one of the things that you got when you showed up to church, is that you got it as a child, you know, and it's like, okay, here's your second helping of guilt, you know, and you're like, okay, thanks.
I thought you were going to say, well, when you came out of the womb, you get guilt. So, I mean, I grew up in a Jewish household, so, you know, we wrote the book on guilt. You followed us. And I've got a mother who actually, you know, signed it. Like, she authored it.
She co-wrote the book and all, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the truth is, you know, I actually talk about this in my first book, but, you know, when you really think about guilt, it really does nothing. It doesn't serve you at all, because you don't resolve anything by feeling guilty. It just makes you feel bad and, you know, maybe gives you a stomach ache and a headache and, you know, like all kinds of like real ailments. But it doesn't, except it. You know, it's like, why do we have it? Like, release.
You're right. And I always find it interesting. I see it often more in women. And I even look at my own family. So let's even get out of the practice and get out of the therapy. Let's look at my own family. And it's like, I look at my great grandmother. I remember she had a lot of guilt. And then my grandmother, she still has a lot of guilt. And then my mother has all this guilt. And then her sister has all this guilt. And I'm like, when am I going to stop this crazy cycle? At what point in time do you say, no more, por favor? I'm not doing this.
Yeah. I mean, you're a therapist. So have you found the resolution?
I'm working on it, and one of the things that I got to be honest, you know, I wish I could say, yes, I figured it all out. The answers are right here in the text. No, I figured out, you know, that we have to, unfortunately, It's more like being able to observe it and notice it when we are there, and being able to understand that a lot of times guilt is feeling that you haven't done enough.
Yeah.
And so when you are able to do what you need to do, do it, and not sit there and beat yourself up over something that you really can't control. And I think that women find it hard to divide up in our mind mentally what it is that we actually have the ability to do and what we don't. And I think that's kind of a considerable, I guess that's as rational a conversation as I can say about that, because I think we have a tendency of not seeing, okay, I did all this, but I wasn't there for that day, so I feel really, really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's just being really conscious. You know, being really conscious of where you are. We are. I mean, women are really good multitaskers, just we are. So, but there's only so many balls you can juggle, and then you have to, like, okay, one of them's dropping. That's going to happen. I'm okay with it.
You know, and I think also you're right. I think, Carrie, you know, another thing, too, is that often I think men have a better ability to just emotionally let things go. And I mm-hmm. think that we have a tendency of analyzing and overanalyzing certain situations, and then trying to like put ourselves in the situation. I think often at that time, our male counterpart has already forgotten about it. And yeah. we have a tendency of not being able to do that as well. And that's what I've been actually working on personally, and also dealing with, like, you know, the negative self-talk with most of my clients, is that we don't end it there. We continue to just keep browbeating ourselves internally with that negative dialogue that, you know, predicates that guilt, basically.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I know so many men in my life have said to me, Carrie, you think too much. And like my former husband, like, he would go, you think too much. And I was like, really? I think that's a good thing. But then, you know, three or four other men that I dated in my life have said that too. And I'm like, shit, maybe I think too much. They don't. They're not thinking, or they're thinking, you know, not with their brains. Maybe I need to do the same thing. I don't know. Life might be better.
It's true. I think it's good to think. I know you're like, men are like, you think too much. And you'll ask them, you're like, what do you think about that? And they'll be like, what are you talking about? You're like, we just talked about this 10 minutes ago. They're like, what were you saying? And you're like, okay. Okay, here
yeah.
we go.
Exactly.
I wish I had that ability to just walk away from that. I mean, and that's really what I'm working on as far as personally and then in the practice. But I think it's interesting. And because I think also, though, it's about being passionate about things. And I think women, and I'm not making a generality at all, but I do think that women have a tendency of being extremely passionate about certain things. And I know you are, for all the work that you've done and everything you've created. I mean, what, honestly, for our listeners, what really truly motivates you?
The passion to be creative. I think, honestly, it's the disquietude in my life. Like, I'm never resting on what I've done. It's always propelling myself forward and wanting to achieve what's next. You know, so it wasn't just about like creating reality TV shows. It was like, let me challenge myself and see if I can write dialogue. And I lived in, honestly, it's weird. I wanted to write scripts for 20 years and I never did because I was so afraid that I couldn't write dialogue. So the book was like a kind of like a middle ground for me in some weird way. And I was like, okay, well, if I can write this book and I can get into characters' heads, maybe at some point I can write a screenplay. And it was interesting challenging myself that way and then finding that I really could, and I could write like a man and I could write like an old woman. And I, you know, and it was like, wow, this is cool. And all these people are talking in my head and, you know, but it was a great process. And I'm like, okay, so then now the next thing is I'm going to write the screenplay based on my book, you know? So I think it's always that, that drive to strive to be creative and just do the next thing. And then I kind of go, okay, well, I'm going to do that and then I'm going to be done and I'm just going to retire and I'm going to play tennis. You know, like my mom said, go play tennis. Why can't you just do that? And I don't think I'm that person. I think I'm going to keep driving and driving and driving until I'm, you know, under the dirt. And, you know, it makes
me
happy.
I like that. What kind of, I guess, how would you motivate for some folks that might be listening tonight to the show that say, you know, hey, I find it, I believe that I can do this, but How would you get, because you were saying earlier, you know, how you kind of put off writing screenplays and then later on you realize you're really great at it and you're very prolific at it. What is kind of, I mean, maybe the lighting the fire under the butt that you would offer our listeners or people that really want to do something but just not sure if they're good enough to do it?
You know, I think underneath it all, there is this fear. That fear drives us a lot. You know, fear drives us to not do what we want to do or do something that we don't want to do. And so it's like taking the baby steps that you need to kind of confront those things that you want to do. And so, you know, when you look at something like, well, for me, it was like writing a screenplay. It's 120 pages. It just seemed like so much. It just seemed so daunting. It's like, all right, well, what if I just sit down and I break this down and I'm just going to take my story and I'm going to pull it apart and I'm going to figure out what the chapters are and I'll just write chapter one and see how that feels. And, you know, and just kind of look at my characters. And so I think, whatever it is for anybody that they are looking to do, or wanting to motivate, it's like, just do one little thing in that direction and see how that feels and then take the next step. And before you know it, you're like, you know, you've walked the gauntlet, you know, you've crossed the rocks of fire and you've gotten to the other side and you're like, woohoo, I did it.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. And yeah. It sometimes does take small steps, baby steps. And I think oftentimes people just like they beat themselves up over it. You know, oh, I just need to get this done. I need to do this. And you're right. I've realized if you just take, you know, steps that way, it can be amazing because you're right. You can look back and go, wow, look at all this that I've done.
Yeah, yeah. I have a girlfriend who has, she used to work at a radio station and she used to get records. You know, like every time a new artist would come in, she would get an album. And she just collected them and put them in her back office and, you know, saved them for like 30 years. And it was just like, it was like just a sea of disarray. And she would look at it and she's like, I got to clean it up. And I listened to it for, I mean, she's been a friend for a long time. So 20 years, she was like, I'm, you know, going to clean it up. And, she turned a zero, you know, when she had a zero birthday, recently. And she was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And it was that baby steps, you know, like just sort of walking in and kind of moving out some of the things that she needed to move out of that space so that she could get to the albums. And it took her a year, but she's at a place now where she has her, it's like a book, like a catalog of all of her albums. She has 7,000 albums.
Wow.
I mean, you know what I mean? And she's got it all cataloged and written up and she did it, but it took her, you know, it took her a year and it took her starting with those baby steps and, you know, facing that fear of cleaning up that back room.
I understand. I'm in the process of cleaning my closet, Carrie. Oh my gosh. This is
awesome.
It's like another job, you know?
Yeah. I love that closet edit.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
it's a little rough for me. I got stuff all over the place. I had some folks come by my house the other day that were in from California actually, and they were like, "Hey, wow, we love your house," but they're like, "By the way, are you moving?" And I'm like, "No."
You have a pile?
Oh gosh, I see. I was raised by pilers. My dad came from the great pilers that we hear about in historical books. And, my mother is the opposite. My mother is the great, I don't understand how she's so organized. Like it's crazy. Like I go to her house and it's just unbelievable organized. I did not get that genetic predisposition.
It's interesting that she was able to live with your father because they found like opposites.
They got divorced 25 years into their marriage, but he's on his third, so he's doing okay. I mean, the third one's a charm, actually. She's a wonderful woman, but God, we're blessed to have her in our life, and I hope that she never leaves him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not organized like that. I mean, I pile things, and so it's like I'm working through the process of hanging up the clothes, and the biggest thing is this does not fit anymore. I mean, this is never going to fit, you know, this, I can put this on one leg, you know, I mean, two legs are not going to fit into the skirt, but one leg, you know, and so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So that's where I'm at right now. But I don't know if you've gone through that process of cleaning out the closet, but it's just not my favorite.
Yeah. No, and I have a hard time also kind of like like, you know, I guess releasing things. You know, I'm like, oh, but that t-shirt, I wore it in 1982 and I went to a concert. Let me keep it another year, but I'm never going to wear it.
See, I wear those t-shirts and my husband gets angry.
Okay, well then.
The ones that say I'm with stupid. I had one that said I'm with stupid, and I had all these other ones.
And one weekend,
I guess it was about a week and a half, I was out of town on business, and I was doing a bunch of speeches out of town. And I came back, and I remember I was like, wow. I was like, man, that drawer is really cleaned out. And I was like, I wonder what was in that. And then, like, you know, fast forward, and I realized that he had thrown away all of my old school t-shirts.
Oh, how funny.
Gone. And he's like, no, they're awful. They're like, they're absolutely awful. He's like, you're never going to wear those again.
Bye-bye. They're gone. Well, I guess, you know, sometimes that's what it takes. Somebody else doing it for you.
Yes, unfortunately, it saddened me. Let me ask you, okay, yeah. So as a child, so you've grown up, you've raised successfully two amazing children. You know, when you were younger, when you were a kid, what really inspired you? I mean, what was the things that inspired you that maybe even continue to inspire you now?
You know, as trite as it sounds, my mother is an amazing inspiration. And she's 96 years old. She is so present and lucid and opinionated. But she constantly amazes me and has helped me through a lot. I still turn to her when I need help, which is crazy. You know, you're kind of like, I don't know whether I should take this guy or not, Mom. What do you think? And she tells me. So she was in life. She was definitely my inspiration in my career. You want to know what my career inspiration was?
For sure.
Okay. Do you remember the show Quantum Leap?
Oh my gosh, for sure, yeah.
Right? Scott Bakula. And like, for people that maybe didn't see it, he was this person who would jump into other people's lives and sort of like fix their lives. And I found that whole concept really fascinating. And I loved, I would sit in the back seat of my parents' car and we would drive around and I would see people like taking their trash out. And I'd go, wow, I wonder what their life is like, you know, like this kind of fat old bald man, and he's taking his trash out and he's got a cigar hanging out of his mouth. And I would make up all these things about who that person was. And I really think it helped me in life to kind of create characters, you know? So
that's cool.
I wish that show would come back. I just loved it. It was just like the coolest thing ever.
How long was that show on?
Oh, good question. I think several years for sure.
What happened to Scott Bakula? Whatever happened to him?
I know. Where is Scott Bakula now? I think he's been in few other shows, but I haven't kept track.
Man, that was a great show. I remember watching that show, Quantum Leap. Yeah, it was cool.
Right? I loved it. It was so, and he would become a woman, he'd become a man, he was a white man, he was a black man, he was a baby.
That's so cool.
It was very cool. Yeah.
I love that. What were some? Okay, so that was your favorite. Was that your favorite TV show growing up?
I loved it. I did. I have to say, I really loved it. That and, what was it called? Lost in Space. When I was really, really little, do you remember that show? Lost in Space,
yeah.
with Will Robinson.
That was a great show.
Right? I wanted to be Penny. So badly, I wanted to be Penny.
Why did you want to be Penny?
I just thought she was cool. I think, I had dark hair. I'm blonde now, like everybody else in LA. But anyway, I had dark hair. And she was the younger daughter. So I was like, I totally identified with her. And I was like, I want to be Penny when I grow up. And I remember we lived in Massachusetts at the time. And I told my parents that I wouldn't move unless Lost in Space was on TV in California. And it was, thank God. And we moved. Cool.
You're like, it's okay. It's all right. As long as this show's on, we're good. We're good.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, okay, we can move.
I'm trying to think of the shows I liked. I'm kind of drawing a blank, but I remember we always watched, Dallas when I was young.
Oh, love Dallas.
Remember J.R. Ewing back? I mean, he came back around just a few years ago, and it was pretty cool. I got to meet him a few years ago when they first started the series again. But I mean, that was a cool show. And then I remember Falcon Crest and
remember
90210, Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. We love these soaps. We love these dramas.
Yeah, they were great. And then Melrose Place never really did it for me. That was never really, I don't know, it wasn't my shtick. But I remember in high school, we would go and watch viewing parties at 90210, and everybody would be like, you know, would want to be like a certain specific character.
Yeah. God. That's so funny. Yeah, and I kind of think, you know, we came up on those dramas, scripted dramas, and I think that now reality TV is the same thing, except they're real people's lives. So it's like watching train wrecks all the time. I think that's why they're so compelling. And I mean, I produce reality TV, so I can say that.
What are some of the best reality? What are some of the most fun reality shows that you think are out there right now?
I love Housewives. I love them from the very start. I grew up in Orange County, so you know, the Orange County girls, those were like my peeps. I'm like, I know you girls. I grew up with you. I went to high school with you. I can identify. But now I think I like the Beverly Hills Housewives a little more. They have a lot more drama going on. Yeah. New York is a little too snooty. New Jersey's a little too ghetto.
Yeah.
Atlanta, I have a hard time relating to. I thought Miami was a little boring. I don't know. There's Dallas, right? The Housewives of Dallas. It just started. And actually, a friend of mine is on that show, Tiffany Hendra.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. I'm happy for her. And I can't wait to see what unfolds there. She's like the hottest husband ever.
Yeah. Tiffany's pretty cool. It's funny. I know Leanne Locken on that show. And she's on there too. And Tiffany, I've met her a couple of times. But yeah, I haven't gotten to see the show yet. So, there's been some random viewing parties as well, but I haven't made it, but it's, you know, we'll see. We'll see if Dallas catches up with the Beverly Hills Housewives. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully they will.
Me too. So, you know, a lot of us talk about, like, you know, it's fun to watch these shows and stuff like that, but I think we also have to have, like, you know, we have like that foundation, that solid foundation. And how do you kind of like give back on a daily basis or a weekly basis, or what is it that really is compelling to you for maybe the less fortunate or what have you?
You know, single mothers, it's been such a big part of my life for so long, being a single mother and then writing the book and then sort of living in that space, in the online space for so long. So I do a lot for single moms. I have a website called Single Mom Expert. It's got dashes in it. But there's a lot, I've written a lot, for women. And there's a charity that I'm very involved in called Single Moms Planet. And it's also a resource, a financial and community resource for single mothers. And they're starting to spread out throughout the country. There's a lot in LA, and our goal is to help, you know, 10,000 single moms in the next 3 years. So, very connected and very passionate about helping my girls get through life and, you know, get to the other side. My motto is live your happily even after. So yeah, that's what I want everybody to have.
You know, one of my best friends is a single mom, and her daughter actually is graduating college this summer. And it's really neat. And she just got an amazing internship and all this great stuff. But, you know, they went through a lot of problems. She was married, and then, you know, her husband was an alcoholic and unfortunately, you know, had already cheated on her before she even gave birth to the child. And then eventually they got divorced. But the father came back in and out of the life. And she was like, you know, I did the best I could. You know, she's like, some things I think I did really, really great. And some things maybe I didn't. But she's like, overall, I feel good about how I raised my kid. And I feel you're right. It's like, you know, that's awesome that you give back to that, because, you know, it's one thing to, like, you know, raise ourselves, but it's just a whole nother, you know, situation when you're hoping that, you know, this kid turns out okay, no matter what, no matter the situations, the financial burden, you know, having a father figure, not having a father figure.
Yeah. You know, we all sort of, we do the best that we can, and we think that we've got it all covered. But it's okay to also know that there are going to be things that maybe we didn't do perfectly, and accept that, and just, you know, be okay with not, with being imperfect. I remember thinking, that I was doing the whole dating thing totally right. You know, I thought I had it covered. I thought I understood. You know, I give my daughters unconditional love. This is how I'm counseling other single mothers, you know, just let them know that no man's going to come in and replace them and they'll be okay. And my 25-year-old daughter, like a year ago, we were out doing something, and she's like, you know, Mom, I just never wanted you. I never wanted anybody. Nobody was perfect. Because I didn't want anyone to replace me. Like, I needed to be your number one. And I was like, wow, here I was, thought I was doing such a good job. And it still wasn't quite right. And I just had to like sit with that and be okay with that, you know? And I was glad that we got to talk about it, because I could then share with her, but you know, again, like, no one's ever going to replace you. You're my daughter. It's different. It's a different kind of love. So, you know, we all do the best we can.
Well, I agree with you. And it's all about perspectives, too. You know, that's the reason why, you know, I do these shows, is that, you know, it's all about, we all have a different perspective in life. And it all comes from, you know, our past and what we've gone through and our experiences. And you're right. You know, sometimes you're doing everything right, and still the perspective is a little different.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're dealing with individuals. You know, I have two daughters. They're completely different. Their personalities are so different. And I, you know, you think you can like one size fits all. It doesn't. Each child is, you know, has a different makeup and different insecurities and different fears. And, you know, you have to like be really clued in to what those are.
That's so true. That's so true. I mean, right now I have a dog and I still got to get clued into what he has, you know, like, are you hungry? Do you need a bone? You know, I mean, it's a little easier. But still, even though certain of those times you go, I just don't know what he wants. You know, I have no idea. Child is a lot. There's a lot more, you know, parts, moving parts, issues, as well as having two. Is always interesting. I always respect anybody that raises, you know, whether it's a single mom or a single dad, especially when it's on their own. It's a lot of work, and I think oftentimes when people aren't having to go through it, you know, it's just like anything else. It's that perspective. It's hard to understand how difficult it might be because you've never had to experience that.
Exactly. You can't understand anything in life unless you actually experience it yourself. And I found that, I don't know if you find this, but you can counsel people and you can tell people and you can warn people, and yet somehow they think that maybe their experience is going to be different, or they don't get it until they're actually in it. And they're like, oh, now I know what you meant by, you know, whatever. And I was like, yeah, you know, but you know, just kind of do the best that you can and you put it out there and, you know, hopefully help some people, and some people learn a little bit later.
Well, that is very true. That it's funny because it's like you can't. That's one thing that I try to express to people is, no matter what I say, you know, there's not always, there's not never, but at the same time, if somebody wants to learn, they'll learn. But you can't make them. You know, it's just the same concept as rehab. I mean, if somebody doesn't want to get sober, you know, just because you want them to get sober doesn't mean that they're going to want to get sober. People have to come to that. You know, some people call it a come to Jesus conversation, whatever it is, with themselves to figure out what they want. And, you know, oftentimes we try to make it where somebody doesn't hit bottom or doesn't have problems. But at the same point, you know, it's like we have to let them learn at their time level.
Right. And sometimes that's the hardest thing to do, too. You know, one of the things, if I can share with people, because I do have adult daughters and it's different, different than having little kids, because they make bigger decisions, right? And they're harder. And my younger daughter is in a relationship right now with somebody that I just, I like confused. I don't get it. And I sit and I watch, and it's so painful because he's so wrong. And I can't tell her, because if I tell her, she'll get angry, or, you know, she'll resent it. Like, she has to come to it herself. And this has been 3 years now, and I'm still like, Okay, when is it going to happen? I don't know. But, you know, so it's hard, you know, that's a hard thing to balance.
My mother, and this is funny, the reason why my mother married my dad in the first place, I found all this out, you know, years ago. My grandmother couldn't stand my dad.
And she was rebelling a little bit.
She couldn't stand him. And it was just, she couldn't understand why my mother would be around someone like that. And yeah. And finally, different from you, my grandmother is just like, if you marry him, I mean, I'm going to disown you pretty much. Like, you can't marry this guy. And so my mother, what did she do? She moved the wedding up, and they got married faster and earlier than they were supposed to.
Right. Well, yeah. And I mean, that's my fear, is that if I say something like your grandma did, that she will. She'll do something like that. So I just sit there and I bite my tongue and I'm very polite and nice. And I'm like, oh, please, 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 Danielle, wake up. Figure it out.
You know, I've been there before myself, and my mother, it's funny, my mom actually stopped the cycle and learned from her own mistakes, you know, because my parents are divorced now, and you know, they're cool, they're fine, but, you know, they're not, like, close buddies or anything, but, you know, it didn't end up, it actually didn't work out in the end, which is kind of ironic, but I was dating someone years ago before I ever got married that was kind of the same. I can kind of feel you where you're coming from right now. And he, you know, when I look back at that, I'm blessed with it and I've gone past it. But at the same time, you kind of go, oh, gosh. And my mom didn't say anything. And she let me make my own decision. And I was able to, it took me about a year and a half, but I was able to actually look and go, you know what, this isn't right for me. And it was great because after I did that, it was about a year after that, my mom, we had a couple of glasses of wine. She's like, by the way, she goes, I wanted to say something so bad, but I was hoping that you would open your eyes and eventually realize. And she goes, and you did. And that's why I'm so happy that he's not my son-in-law.
That's awesome. Good job.
Yeah, it works. It works. I know you're doing the right thing, but it's the hardest. What you're doing is the hardest thing to do, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's painful. But thank you.
We'll say prayers.
Mom. Yeah.
Everybody out there listening, we need some prayers tonight right now, okay?
Yes, so, please.
And I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there, too, that know exactly what we're talking about, because you want the best for your kids, and the last thing you want is them to make a bad decision that you can see happening, like we talked about those reality shows, like a train wreck from a mile away. You're like, oh, gosh, I don't want to see this happen. I mean, we can see this on TV, but I don't want to see this in my own life. You know,
right.
And so hopefully she'll come around. You know, I think it's interesting too, Carrie, you know, in our life when we deal with these series of events, and there's certain times where our life is just on top of the world, and then there's certain times where we go, God, could it get any worse? And then there's times when you say, well, I guess I'm going to hold my tongue. Is there any songs that you really connect with, especially in times of stress, maybe, or songs that really connect with you and your heart and soul that really just propel you to keep going forward and believing in the process?
You know, that was an interesting question, and I don't know if this is exactly in line with what you're asking me in this moment, but excuse me if you don't love them, but I am a ridiculous fan of Nickelback. I love them. And they wrote a song, I think it was in 2008, and it's called If Today Was Your Last Day. And, for a long time, that was, like, my marching, you know, my song. Because it was, like, it's all about living in the moment and being really present. And, you know, we talked about, like, having no fear and you know, keep propelling your career or whatever forward. And that's what that song represents to me. It's like my life. It's like, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. Yesterday's gone. Tomorrow, I don't know. So I have to be in today. What am I going to do today to live my life to the fullest? And I think that's how I try to live every single day.
Wow, that's awesome. If Today Was Your Last Day by Nickelback. So that's a great choice, because you're right. It really does let all the other stuff kind of flow by the wayside when it comes to things like this, because you say, you know, heck, you know, if this was it, am I doing what I want to do right now? And is this where I need to be at right this moment?
Yeah, the lyrics are hauntingly accurate for me. Anyway, check it out. I love it.
Yeah, I love that. I think I've heard that song several times. I like that song.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I might turn it on my radio today after we're off the air.
Yay!
Yay!
I love it. I think I will too. I'll go to iTunes and spend my 99 cents on it. You know,
yeah.
Or maybe I'll hope that Pandora will play it. You know, it is interesting though. It's about being in the moment. And I find that's the thing. It's like, you're right. It's like, no matter what's going on, what's happening, it's about, am I in the right place at the right time, and am I in the present moment? Because you're right. It's like, if you don't focus on that, it's like all of a sudden we take ourselves out of the game of life, I think.
Totally. You know, and I think with so many, you know, we look at Prince and, you know, all these people that have passed on, and, you know, they're young, relatively young. And, you know, you're like, we got to do this. We get whatever it is that's holding us back. Let it go. Release it. Go for it. You don't get a second chance. You don't, you know, time is all we have, really. And you don't get a second chance. We don't know if we get a second chance, but, you know, like right now, I don't think so. So let's just be in the moment and do what makes us happy. Find our bliss. And, you know, and part of that is, you know, you struggle with the divorce and being a single mom and all that, but it's like, if that's going to bring you happiness, you know, if not being in a bad relationship is going to find you some peace, then I think go for it. Do it. You know, if cleaning out your closet is eventually going to find you so calm, then, you know, roll with it, girl.
Own it. Own it. Be it. You're right. I mean, you're right. It will eventually help. And I think that when we do organize our thoughts, and that's one of the things that, you know, I'm really a big proponent about. And I can tell you are too. I mean, especially with your MA in spiritual psychology, you know, the idea of being, you know, doing what you need to do and getting there. It's like for oftentimes I'll explain to people, you know, hey, you know, when you're on your way to work or whatever, really be part of being, you know, part of going there, part of the process. And I said, oftentimes we're over there thinking about what happened yesterday or the argument you had with your boss or whatever it is, but we're not in the moment and we're just missing out on all this stuff that's really cool that's happening. And it's kind of like we miss out on life. And I think that's very interesting when you put it all in perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't live in the what if. And the other thing is, like, you know, if you don't clean your closet, and then you just have to be okay with it. You're like, okay, dude, it's not going to happen, but I'm going to be okay with it. My closet's going to be a mess, but I'm going to find that peace anyway. So that, you know, because we all should have peace in our life. We all should have calm. We should, you know, who wants to be stressed? Why do you need to live at that angst when you can live in a different place?
I agree. And that's when that whole worry and guilt comes in, because all of a sudden you worry about the process while I worry about the closet. Okay, so now I'm going to worry. And, you know, for everybody listening, you know, everybody knows that we're kind of making, I mean, it is a closet that I'm clean, but it is kind of a microcosm of our life. It's like, okay, so we worry about it. And it's like not calling back your mother. Not calling back your mother-in-law, whoever it is, and you're like, I'm worried that I haven't called back. And then all of a sudden that worry turns into guilt, and then you're like, you feel guilty. And then you feel like that shame, you know, and then you get that blame shame game where you're like, I'm going to play the blame shame game for a while. And it's like, just pick up the darn phone. You know, it comes to, you know, either deal with it or don't deal with it. But, and I think that's where that guilt comes back, like we were talking about earlier, is that we kind of worry and then we shame ourselves into feeling guilty when we either just need to do the action or get past the inaction of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
We figured it out. We figured it out on this show, how to get past guilt. We figured it out.
Yay! We did it!
This is monumental. This is monumental. So let me ask you, on every one of these shows, I have to ask all the celebrities on this show, because I find that this is interesting because it's so different for everybody. Carrie, what was the moment in your life when you knew that you were on the right path and that you were successfully comfortable in your own skin?
Last month.
Tell me more.
it's an interesting question. And I think I finally got to a place I'm working on a project right now. I'm working on a TV project right now with a group of people who are fabulous because they empowered me to be creative and trusted me with my choices and decisions, and are so grateful and appreciative of what I bring to the table. I have never been like more blissful about where I am in my career ever. You know, running my own company was very stressful and challenging, but being in this place of, you know, being able to be creative and having people, recognize me for my gifts has made me completely comfortable in my own skin. Like I am really happy. I can genuinely say I'm really happy.
I love that. You know, I think that I find that often too, especially in the creative world more so, and maybe not. Maybe this goes across all lines, is that it's like when you're doing something and you're working your butt off and you're believing in the process, and, you know, you occasionally have these stumbling blocks where you go, God, you know, is this ever going to happen? And then you go through the process. Okay, I'm back on the process. Everything's good. You know, I'm listening to my song, you know, my Nickelback song, and everything's okay. You know, and,
right.
And then you have like these ups and downs. And it's like you believe in it, but then you're like, you don't sit there and really analyze that, but you're like, if other people would just see it too, you know what I mean? This could be all real. And
right.
I think you're right, especially in creative processes. I feel that. Because we're not ever really satisfied sometimes, because we know that things can be better and better and better, and that we can keep working on things and contributing, that finally, though, when all that comes together, I agree, it's almost like knowing what happens after this lifetime, you know, and you find out, and, you know what I mean? And like three people corroborate with you and go, that's exactly what happened. And you go, you know what? I knew it. You know, and everybody's like, wow, okay. And all of a sudden, you realize that for the first time ever, you believe that, but now other people get it.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of liken it to, you know, walking on a tightrope. Like, life is sort of walking on a tightrope, and you're constantly trying to find your balance. And then finally getting to that place where you got it. You know, it's solid. You're like, wow, this is great. This is a fun trip. I like this. I'm there.
I like that analogy. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, I've been there before where I don't even know where the tightrope is.
You know, oh God, that's really scary. Yeah. And I feel that too. I used to, I the other analogy that I use is like, you know, those logs that roll down the rapids in the river. I, you know, for a good 5 years, I felt that way. Like, when I took a break from TV and I was kind of writing my books and doing some speaking and that kind of thing, I constantly felt like I was rolling on that log and never finding a place where I was like, God, I can rest, or I get this, I understand this. And, now coming back, you know, just the start of this year, and I'm producing a show, kind of like a housewife show. It's called Foxy Ladies. It's going to be aired internationally. But finding my grounding and finding where I feel good about myself and what I'm doing and what I'm creating and the stories that I'm creating, and that they're compelling, and yes, people like them. I'm like, yeah, I'm there. I get it. I'm so happy. I'm off the log. Come on, terra firma. Yay.
Yay. That's cool. Yeah, no, I love that. And I agree with you. It's nice to have, you know, it's nice to have that purpose and that belief, and know that there's other people that see it too, and that see kind of the end result. It's like, you know, it's like being in a room and half of it's decorated and half of it's not, but there's people that can actually see the vision. And other people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. You're like, okay, well, you know, crap, here we go. You know, and I find that very interesting. So let me ask you this, because I know that often, you know, people go, oh, if you're in Hollywood or you're doing your thing, you know, there's no way, you know, most people are one way or another. I mean, do you find yourself, you know, more like an introvert, or do you find yourself more of an extrovert in life?
I am a born introvert.
Interesting.
And I had to become an extrovert. I remember when I was 12 years old, my mom took me to like this taco stand, and she used to order my food for me. And she's like, "I'm not doing it. You're not going to eat unless you order your food." It was terrifying. And I'm like, "But I'm hungry and I want my tacos." And she made me order my own food. And that was like the start of the coming out of my shell. And I still feel like I was pretty shy in high school. And then when I met and married my former husband, and God bless him, you know, for better or worse, we, you know, had ups and downs, and there were lots of good things. I give him a lot of credit. He taught me how to be a TV producer. You know, I came in and started working for him, but he also taught me to be an extrovert because he was a big personality. And if I didn't speak up, I would get lost in the room. I would get lost in the mess that was, you know, my former husband. And so I give him credit for that. And I never looked back. And I have to say, if you're an introvert, learn how to be an extrovert, because extroverts get a lot more stuff and a lot more attention, you know, and then you kind of come to this place where you can ask for things. And believe it or not, when you ask for it, 9 times out of 10, you get it. But if you don't ask, you'll never get it. So, you know, it became who I am, and I like who I am a lot better than the introvert.
That's cool. Yeah, I have a buddy of mine. He's one of my best friends. We've been friends since elementary school, and we go to lunch. We try to go to lunch once a week still. Sometimes it's twice, once every 2 weeks. But I mean, we went to school, elementary school together, middle school, high school, went to different colleges. But it's interesting because he is a total introvert. And it's not until he has like a couple of glasses of wine that he can actually look other people in the eye.
Yeah.
And it was funny when we were in school. I mean, like when he was trying to check out a girl, I mean, it was like sunglasses on, and then he'd kind of look off to the side and would not try to make any eye contact. And I was like, come on, man. But it's interesting because, yeah, you're right. Being an introvert, it can be very difficult, especially in your industry. But I think overall, it's like life. You know, it's hard enough sometimes to put yourself out there, even as an extrovert. And it can be a little overwhelming, you know, when you go to some of these events or you're dealing with some of these major personalities and you're like, oh my gosh, what do you say? And I found that, like you said, if you're in the process and you're in the now, it's not such a big undertaking. But the same thing, it's like it takes a lot, especially without any pharmaceutical help to really put yourself out there.
Yeah. Well, let me give you I'll share a tip with people, because it is hard, especially like, and when I became a single parent, or, you know, and I didn't have a partner, and I haven't had a partner, you know, for any length of time, for a long time. And you go to like a wedding or, you know, like a big function, and there's hundreds of people and you're there by yourself. I found that, you know, if just walking over to somebody, anybody who just seems sort of friendly, and complimenting them on something, like, "I like your shoes," which is a great girl starter, conversation starter, or "Your hair looks great," or "Where'd you get that dress?" or "That color looks good on you." You immediately, you know, you've complimented them, they're engaged, they like you, and you can start a conversation. And I don't know if it'll last an hour or 5 minutes, but you've done it, you know, like you started your first step to extroversion. So
that's great.
Try it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great tip, because I know that there's a lot of folks out there that, you know, it's just, it can be kind of stressful, and I understand that. I get it, and I understand how it can be a little overwhelming when you walk into a room, especially if you're by yourself. And that's always an interesting thing. And, you know, Carrie, it was really interesting. I remember I realized it, and I came to a conclusion, this was about 6 years ago, is that when you are on your own, it's interesting how it's harder. It can be almost harder to engage than when you have, like, a posse with you, a group with you. And it's interesting, because it's almost like people know it, like they can smell it. Oh, she's on her own, you know. And I was like, man, this sucks, you know. But then I realized you have to put yourself out there even more, or otherwise you want to turn around and run out. You know, I'm out of here.
Right.
I don't need to be at this wedding. I don't need to be here. I'm going to go. I gave my gift already. I'm done, you know. You know, I do find that liquid courage helps a little bit. Champagne's never been a bad asset when it comes to, you know, making small talk, but you're right about that, you know, complimenting somebody and just kind of getting in the groove of talking and kind of mixing around always does help.
Yeah. And if you want to practice before you get to the big event, engage somebody in a conversation in an elevator.
perfect.
You know, there's two of you in an elevator. Because I went for years, like, no, I'm not talking to anybody. And then I found that I do this now all the time. I'll say something to anybody who's in the elevator with me. I'll just like, good morning, or yeah, like, you going to do your workout, or great shoes. And it's so funny. Like, people are a little put off and they're like, hey, this is cool. Yeah, all right, I'm going to engage in a conversation with you. So, you know, start small and work up.
That's awesome. I like to do that when I go to certain apartment complexes, certain high rises in New York City. And it's got to be a certain Jewish population too. I like have to have a lot of fun with people like that, because then I always start conversations, and I always think it's interesting when they actually respond back. You know what I'm saying? Because you're like, hey, I'm going to do this, you know, and you know that you're the only one that's ever started a conversation with them in the last 15 years in an elevator. You know,
exactly.
But they're like, you know, she's got to have something going on.
Right. And you're shocked. You're going up 15 floors. So you may as well, you know, they may as well answer you. Right. You're not going to.
What else are you going to do? You're just going to be quiet? I mean, the whole time. I mean,
exactly.
And life's too short. Like you said, life's too short. And it's funny because, and I always make a kind of a joke about that, because my husband's parents, they live up, you know, and they're Jewish. They live up in the certain area, and everybody in that building, and for that matter. And it's very funny because you can really practice your skills, because that's going to be one of the buildings where if somebody doesn't respond back, it's going to be right there. They're not interested at all.
Yeah, right.
You'll leave
it
hanging.
But that's a big step. There you go. You did it.
They're going to leave you hanging out there. No, but seriously, that's a very good tip. And for everybody listening, you know, that it really is. It's like you start working on baby steps and it becomes easier and easier. And then all of a sudden, you know, being an introvert isn't defining you. You know, Carrie, you're so interesting. I mean, you there's so many different dynamics to you. That's so neat. And so I have to ask you, because this is the main question here on this show, is that, you know, the show is titled Live Your True Life, The Celebrity Perspective, and Live Your True Life Perspectives is the other show as well. But how do you on a daily basis live your true life?
It's kind of what we talked about before, as being in the moment. You know, and living in integrity. And integrity is huge for me. So it's all about, you know, saying what you mean and meaning what you say. And I feel like that is the best place for me to get through every single day of my life.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, that's very succinct and very cool. And I think for everybody listening, they can understand that too, because it really is when we really just in the moment and we're in the space that we need to be at, that guilt and that worry goes away, you know, and we're able to focus on what really matters.
Yeah. And I never, and just to take it one step further, I never say something to somebody that I can't follow through on. Nobody in my life, not my children, not my mom, no one. I try not to, because I never want to disappoint anybody. So I would rather not say, yeah, I'll do that, and then not be able to show up and do it. So that's part of like being in that integrity. So I'm excited for you to come here to LA and for us to do Pop the Beak. Because I made that promise.
Yay!
And we're going to do it. Yeah! So we are going to get, you know, six-pack abs, or at least we're going to start.
Carrie's taking me to the gym, by the way. If y'all haven't, it's a major class that I don't have in the area that I'm actually syndicated from. We don't have it yet, but yes, I would love to do that, and I really appreciate the invitation, because I will definitely take you up on that.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it, girlfriend.
I'm going to get my butt kicked at workout, guys, by the way.
Let me tell you. Yes. Your entire body will shake, and then you'll leave and you'll be like, oh my God, that was so good. I hated it when I was going through it, but now I love you for it, Carrie.
Yes, exactly. And I'll be like, okay, I want to do this again. When can I come back? So let me,
exactly.
So for everybody out there listening, where can we find your book beginning on, what is it, May 3rd, right? The book comes out on May 3rd?
Yes. The book officially releases May 3rd. I have a website that's myloverskeeper.com where you can pre-order. But it's going to be Amazon, I think, already has it up, Barnes & Noble. There's a website called All Romance. It is released by the publisher is Alora's Cave. So you may be able to find it on their website, too. It'll link you to the sale page. But yes, please buy my book. It's the best beach read ever. Like it's I call it cotton candy for your head. It's an easy breezy read. Take you to the beach. It's just fun. And again, I encourage all of you when you read it to reach out to me, email me, and let me know who you think I am in the book.
Oh man, I'm gonna do that for sure. I'm doing that for sure, Carrie. I'm already trying to analyze right now, but I'm not gonna say what I think already. I'll hold out. I'm not gonna be a spoiler. I'm not gonna do that. But yeah, I totally look forward to reading the book. I look forward to spending more time with you. I think you are just an amazing woman doing amazing things, and I can't wait to have you back on the Celebrity Perspective.
Thank you. I'm ready. Let's do it next week.
Yes, let's do it. See? Carrie knows what's up. See, that's the thing. I enjoyed having Carrie Zane on the show. Looking forward to all of her successes. I'm so looking forward to reading the latest book, getting it after May 3rd, and really probably taking it to the beach with me. Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the Celebrity Perspective. I hope you have a wonderful night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And in the future, guys, check out AshleyBurgess.com. Check out the website. Also, check us out on Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, any of those, iTunes. Also, we just got a new facelift on the website, and I want to hear what you have to say about it. I'm looking forward to your comments and thoughts. Stay tuned because I've got a great show for you next in the Celebrity Perspective, Live Your True Life Perspectives. We'll be back here in 3 shakes.